Council.
All righty.
I just also wanted to, you know, I commended Bruce Walker for the great job in implementing the roll card strategy. I also want to compliment the haulers.
Thank you. I'll pass that along. We appreciate that. Thank you.
So with the council's blessing, I'd actually like to pause our discussion on these ordinances so that we can keep the council item with Mill Park Elementary on time. They have to leave by, they have to leave in 20 minutes. We want you to get back to school. So, Carla, can I just suspend the rules?
Yeah.
Without objection, I'll suspend the rules. And, Carla, can you please read the council item for item 630?
Mm-hmm. Bureau of Human Resources, adopt a class program.
This is an exciting program, and Anna Canwit is going to and her team are going to sort of give us the overview. It involves the fourth grade class from Mill Park Elementary, part of the David Douglas School System.
That's right. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Anna Canwit, Assistant Director of Bureau of Human Resources. Thank you so much for your time this morning. We are here to showcase a program called Adopt a Class and introduce the young people that our Bureau and employees from RISC and PBOT have been working with all year. With me is Wayne Abbott and Janice Leonetti, who run the nonprofit organization here in Portland. And on my right is Tanya, who is a member of the fourth grade class who moved here from the Ukraine. You want to say hello?
Hello.
And Rachel Hendry and Teresa T. are the teachers, and they'll be speaking as well. And the whole fourth grade class is in the back, as you can see. And there are students who will be coming up to introduce themselves and their adopters, and so that you can get to know them. The way the program works is each employee adopts is a buddy of one of the children in the class. We have various activities we do with the children. They write letters to us, we write back, and it's really a very fulfilling experience and takes on average maybe 10 to 12 hours of our work time outside of work to do this over the course of the year. So it's really, in terms of the cost-benefit analysis, we think the benefits far outweigh our time away from the office. It's really not very much. We piloted this program last year, we're happy to be able to take another fourth grade class this year. With Laurel Buttman, we're still working on trying to expand this program to other bureaus. It's a great way to get in and teach them about city government, what city employees do, and give them incentives of why they want to stay in school so they can come work for the city and do fun things like that. I'm going to introduce Janice and Wayne, who will take a few minutes right now just to talk a little bit about the program overall.
Good morning. My name is Wayne Abbott. This is Janice Leonetti. She's my wife. And we are co-directors for the Adopt-A-Class Foundation here in Portland, Oregon. Adopt-A-Class is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we're dedicated to providing positive role models and enriched educational experiences for our students who are attending Title I schools. This is our third full year of having Adopt-A-Class in Portland, Oregon, the only other place on the planet that this program exists is in Cincinnati, Ohio, where the program started. It started in Cincinnati in 2002. There are 13 schools in Cincinnati today engaged in the program. There are about 3,500 students that have been adopted by a like number of adopters in Cincinnati. In our third year here, we took on four schools in the Portland metropolitan area in the Adopt-A-Class program: James John Elementary out in St. John's, Humboldt in North Portland, Capitol Hill over on the southwest side, and of course Mill Park in the David Douglas School District. We have about 650 students that have been adopted, as we call them, by a like number of adopters, or big buddies, as our students like to call them. They are from 24 different businesses and organizations throughout the Portland area, and they are very, very dedicated to this program. Adopt-A-Class generates tremendous benefits for our students, for our teachers and our schools, but also creates and generates tremendous benefits for our volunteers. the greatest of which I believe is the emotional reward that helps that comes from helping an at-risk child succeeded in their education and at school. We've been in this program long enough that we've been able to establish that the program is not only effective, it is sustainable, and is also very cost efficient, because there's no money that is charged to businesses and organizations to join Adopt a Class. There's no fees. There's no expense. The only expense that goes into this program is the expense that the adopting companies and businesses and organizations decide that they want to put in the program to support the program, their students, their classroom, and their teachers. So Janice now will tell you a little bit about how the program works, give you a brief description of it.
I just want to say thank you also just for your support of just employee volunteerism in any program. We just find that very important, and thank you for your time today. We're always excited to talk about Adopt a Class and the opportunity to connect adult positive role models from the community into the school through the six activities. Our six activities, each company and organization just personalizes or customizes to their specific what's on their heart, what resources they have, and then how they can complement the classroom. As Anna said, it's only about 10 hours of employees' time over the entire school year. It's all done as a group activity, which is wonderful because it builds a lot of camaraderie and team building within the business as well. The six activities, just really quickly, the first one's an introductory letter that the kids write about themselves to their adopter, which is a great writing activity. It's a great way to connect with their what they call their big buddy. The big buddy receives a letter, and they write a letter back to their kids, and so it's starting to build that connection and that personal relationship. The next activity is a winter activity, and it usually just ties in with whatever's happening in that classroom. At Mill Park, they have Polar Express Day, and so they read the Polar Express book, they drink hot chocolate, they wear their PJs, whatever, and then at the end of the day, go to the gym and sing songs, and that kind of starts their winter break. In January, the kids are asked to write a thank you letter, so they're also just learning good social skills as well. And then in spring, there's an activity, and it's kind of whatever they would like to tie into. So, for instance, their activity is today, bringing the kids down to meet all of you. One thing I'd like to add, too, that's great about the program is you can do other things if you would like to. And one thing that the Human Resources group did is they found a Russian-speaking translator for a child that's only been here for 2 months. So it's just a really beautiful program, how it connects people within the community and just kind of just enriches people's lives.
All right, so I want to introduce Rachel and Rachel Hendry and Teresa Thiem.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council, for letting us share with you today. My name is Rachel Hendry.
And I'm Teresa Thiem.
And we feel very blessed to be working with the City of Portland Bureau of Human Resources again this year. They adopted our fourth grade class last year, and it's very exciting to be working with them again. Teresa and I have taught at Mill Park, each of us, for about 15 years. And now that we have children of our own, we work as a job share team with this fourth grade class. And we have 28 fourth graders this year. To give you a picture of what life is like in our classroom, we have a few statistics to share. About 83% of our students receive free and reduced lunch. Only 7 of our students speak English as their primary language at home. We have 6 different languages that are spoken by students in our classroom. And in our school, we have over 18 languages that are spoken. We have 1 Burmese student who joined us from a refugee camp in Thailand. And as was said before, we have a student that has been here for 2 months from Russia. So with this type of diversity, we have many unique needs in our classroom. And that's coupled with increased pressure to raise test scores. And so we have to spend a lot of time on reading, writing, and math. And unfortunately, that means that we have little time for social studies, science, health, art. And so we are always looking for really memorable ways to teach those subjects and opportunities that give our students an understanding of the world around them. We also look for exciting and interesting ways to help students learn about jobs in the community. We really want them to aspire to continue their education and to have a career.
Our buddies have paid for us to be able to come here today. And so in preparation of this trip, we studied jobs in Portland, buildings, history, and the local government. Our students learned about the mayor, the city council. We made sure that they knew all of your names before they came. And many of our students have never been downtown before they were in the fourth grade. And this is an activity that would not have been able to happen without our buddies. And we are very thankful to our buddies to give us this experience and to help us learn about some of the things that we have studied. And after this presentation, we're going to be joining our buddies for lunch, and they're going to be giving us a tour of their workplaces and what their jobs entail, and just giving our students an opportunity to learn more about what happens after school. It's very important for us to have community members inside our classroom and involved with our students. These relationships that they build with their buddies provides our students with good role models, as well as having just additional adults who take interest in their lives. They've been able to write back and forth during the year. Our students wrote goals, educational goals for themselves in the fall, and they have been writing back and forth to their buddies discussing how they're doing on their goals throughout the year. In June, our buddies are going to come back and visit with us. We're going to be presenting animal projects to them and also having a further discussion on those goals that they set for themselves throughout the year. So this type of involvement has been very invaluable to our classroom. And we have some students that would like to tell you a little bit about some of the things that we've done this year.
Great. Come on up. We're really glad that you're here. Why don't you, before you speak, just tell us your name, and we'll look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, my name is Deja, and my buddy name is Don. We write letters to our buddies, and they write us back. It was fun to get to know them, and it helps us to be a better writer, too.
Good job. Give a round of applause. Hi.
Hi, my name is Alexis Beretta, and my buddy's name is Debbie. We shared our goals for the school year with our buddies. They asked us how we're doing on our goals.
Thank you. Good job.
Hello, my name is David, and my buddy's name is Jennifer. In fall, our buddies came to meet us at school. They took us our book fair and brought us new books.
Good job.
Hello, my name is Taylor, and my buddy's name is Patrick. At Christmas time, our buddies came to visit us and brought us each a new game. They taught us to play the games, and we had hot chocolate and donuts.
Good job, Taylor.
Hello, my name is Cameron, and my buddy's name is Dean. Our buddies paid for our bus to be able to come here today. We will get to visit the Portland building and see where they work. We will have lunch together, and we'll talk about their jobs.
Good job, Cameron.
Hello, my name is Maddie, and my buddy's name is Kathy. Our buddies will visit us at the end of the school year to see our animal projects. They will talk to us about our goals and will donate money to our classroom so we have some books to read over the summer.
Good job, Madeline.
So as you can tell, having these buddies has been a really good experience for these kids, and we're very thankful for this program.
Good job. Thank you.
Mayor and commissioners, when we were here last year, you generously donated more of your council time to meet each of the kids just to shake their hands. And if we have time to do that, it was really special for them last year.
And meet right now?
Just to shake hands and go through. So,
oh, you want to?
Yeah, if you could just come here, that would be great.
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
Thank you so much.
I just want to say, Anna, if you want to go through my office, too, as part of your visit.
Oh.
I've got some really interesting photographs of sea creatures on the wall.
Oh, really? Well, that's great.
Yeah,
thank you, Commissioner.
Feel free to
We'll do that before we go across the street.
So I should come around here.
You are wonderful. Cameron, you did a great job. Really good.
Hi.
I know you were. Not a concert. All right.
Thank you so much. We appreciate
Anna,
it.
Thank you for helping to make this happen. All right, that gets us back to council calendar item. We had gotten through 628, I believe, unless there is additional. Anyone that wishes to testify on 628? If not, can you please read the title for 629?
Authorize the rates and charges for water and water-related services during the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2009 to June 30, 2010, and fix an effective date.
Good morning, I'm David Schaff.
I wanted to
Commissioner Leonard.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you, Mayor Adams, members of the council. We have representatives of the Water Bureau here talk in more specificity, but I wanted to make a couple opening remarks. We do find ourselves in the position of having to ask for a substantially higher rate of increase than what we'd otherwise like to do. Partly, the rate increase is due to a good part of it, us in prior years taking smaller rate increases than what we should have. And so part of the part of this rate increase, a substantial part, is making up for, frankly, what I now consider was a mistake in the past to abide by PURB's recommendations and hold water rates down below what it actually should have been to keep current with costs. If you recall, earlier this year, the council adopted a request that bureaus accelerate capital projects that they have in their plans to help stimulate the local economy. Part of this rate increase is consistent with that. At Powell Butte, we are, as council is aware, constructing a second 50 million gallon tank to store water in. That project will create 1,500 family wage jobs for over the next 5 years. Sometimes percentages are somewhat deceiving, so I thought I'd put in real terms what this rate increase means. It's a $2.76 per month increase in water rates, put in context with BES's rate increase, while that's just a little over 6%, is still a per month increase over 10% higher than the water rate increase. So this is a responsible budget. It is vitally important to the health, safety, and well-being of our citizenry to have a water system work, and not just to drink. When we have the unfortunate circumstance of fires that happen consistently throughout the city, it is important to have a water delivery system that works the first time. You don't have options at that point
to look for other sources of water. When the fire bureau turns on a hydrant, it must work. A lot of this increase is due to increasing maintenance of those systems to make sure they work the first time. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to David Schaff, the director of the Water Bureau.
Mr. Schaff.
Good morning. I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Water Bureau. And I just wanted to remark that I hate following fourth graders. I heard one of them say, oh, my God, I touched Sam Adams. I shook Amanda Fritz's hand. So.
He said Mrs. Fritz. I love being called Mrs. Fritz. And I didn't have a name tag on. They remembered.
They did.
Yeah, that's good.
Thank you.
David, technically you followed Commissioner Leonard. And I just want to.
That's not as hard.
There's nothing inconsistent with what he said, though. That's entirely consistent with his concern.
Like I said, I hate following fourth graders. I think I may have just made a mistake here.
Yeah. One of a long series, by the way.
Thank you very much. I just want to remind you who we are. We serve 800,000 people. Water every day, either directly or through our wholesale contracts. We deliver 35.5 billion gallons of water a year. Our average daily demand is 100 million gallons. We hit that yesterday. We were a little more than that over the weekend. On a hot summer day, we can deliver 180 million gallons of water. We have two dams. We store about 21 billion gallons of water behind them. We have 33 groundwater wells, which can produce our average daily demand of 100 million gallons a day if we need it. We have three conduits, 75 miles worth of conduits. We have 2,100 miles of pipes. We have 40 pump stations, 15,000 hydrants, 44,000 valves, and 183,000 services. We have 130 drinking fountains, and we have 22 decorative fountains, including two brand new ones that will be coming online in this fiscal year. Takes $148.5 million to run this organization. And of that, $69.5 million constitutes our operating budget. And the rates that we are proposing today reflect a 6.2% decrease in my operating budget. That's the basic day-to-day work that's done by the Portland Water Bureau, keeping those fountains running, making sure that the drinking fountains are clean, making sure that valves, when they're opened or closed, will actually work, making sure, as Commissioner Leonard said, that when the firefighters roll up, the hydrant works. In addition, I have a $78.9 million capital budget. Now, that reflects a 38.5% increase over the last fiscal year. That sounds like a lot. We have a lot of things on our plate. We are looking at the potential for $800 million over the next several years in expenses as a result of LT2, building both a treatment plant, if we're required to, as well as replacing our in-town drinking reservoirs. Notwithstanding all that, we've pushed out $54 million worth of capital projects over the next 5 years in order to be able to afford this capital budget this year. Our revenue constitutes $114.6 million from rates and charges. Retail revenue, we receive about $87.7 million from our ratepayers, from the individual homeowners to the large commercial customers, to our public customers like Portland Parks and Recreation or the Port of Portland. Our wholesale customers, ranging from TVWD, Tualatin Valley Water District, down to the smallest, I think it was the Lorna Water District, which has less than 100 people, constitute $17.2 million of our rates and charges. We get $7.7 million in capital contributions, so reimbursable work, and our SDCs bring in about $2 million. The difference between the 114.6 and the 148 is financing, debt financing. We have 627 positions in the Portland Water Bureau. That's a 5.9% decrease. We've eliminated 39 positions in the Water Bureau. They were vacant. I'm not going to be proposing to lay anybody off this year, but we're down to the nubs. I believe we've talked already a little bit about our primary rate drivers. Let me tell you what they are again. Primarily, they're the CIP, our LT2, and as I mentioned, we are partially offsetting our rate increase and our CIP increase by pushing projects out into the out years.
Could you just define CIP and LT2 for those watching
sure.
at home?
Ooh, LT2, long-term enhanced to-surface water.
It?
Okay, it's a new federal drinking water regulation that will require us, that's intended to deal with the parasite Cryptosporidium, and it is going to be requiring us to build a new treatment plant by April of 2014 and to remove our open finished drinking water reservoirs at Mount Tabor and Washington Park from service.
CIP is
Capital Improvement Plan.
Thank you.
Although it should be noted that we are resisting those regulations, including having filed a federal lawsuit and intensely lobbying our congressional delegation for relief.
Yes. Other rate drivers include inflation. We do have a lower COLA than we had anticipated, and that's a good thing. We will get a small rate benefit from that. We are hoping that will allow us to bring some of the money back that we had cut from our budget to hire a number of summer youth over the course of the next several months this summer. Primarily, our costs have been driven by things like chemicals, power, steel, et cetera, the basic nuts and bolts of the water system. As Commissioner Leonard mentioned, there were a number of deferrals of prior rate increases. The resources that we had resources available to mitigate rate increases, and we used those, but we're at the point where we can't defer them anymore. Commissioner Leonard mentioned that we had a number of rate increases that we deferred. In 2005-06, we had a 0.6% rate increase. In 2006-07, we had a 2.5% rate increase. Those were well below inflation, and we are now at the point where we have to catch up to those deferrals. Our retail demand has dropped, as Dave Johnson from the PIRB mentioned, and I will cover a little bit more later on. And we have reduced non-rate revenue. So our reimbursable work is down, our SDCs are down, and there are lower interest rates and lower billable overhead rates. I just want to mention from the standpoint of the CIP and LT2, we recently looked at 8 treatment plants built across the country that produce over 100 million gallons a day. And remember, we will have to build a facility that could that can produce at least 200 million gallons a day. We've looked at the last 10 years, and the average length of time to build those was 62 months. As of July, we have 56 months. So the sky's not falling, but the countdown clock is ticking. It's sitting on my desk, and I looked at it this morning. I have 1,776 days to complete a treatment plant by April 1, 2014.
It's a very patriotic number.
I didn't think of that. It's only today. Demand, if you look at the next page of my materials, their lower demand does increase our rates. We are primarily a fixed cost system, as I've said, 35.5 billion gallons, and that takes $148 million. If it's only 34 billion gallons, it will still take approximately $148 million to run the Water Bureau. We are lowering the forecast to align with actual usage in recent years. As a matter of fact, this next year we are forecasting 27.8 million CCF. Now, just for comparison purposes, we are on track to use approximately 28.2 million CCF this fiscal year. And this was not a particularly, from July 1 to June 30th of this year, was not a particularly warm, hot year. So we believe that our forecast is accurate. We have missed it a number of times. That's why we've made the adjustments. That's why we've adjusted down to 27.8. Moving down to 27 million CCF, which is what the PIRB and Dave Johnson have specifically asked us to do, has only occurred one time since 1970, and moving it all the way down to 26 million CCF, which is another proposal that we received from the PIRB, hasn't occurred since 1968. So
wouldn't that have the effect of lowering or increasing the rate even more if you
Yes.
Lowered the forecast?
If we had to lower the forecast to 27 from the 27.8 we're using, it would increase rates even more, yes. And just from our perspective, the economic downturn has not really materially impacted demand this year that we have seen, and we don't really expect it to see that next year. But as I said, we have reduced our demand forecast to 27.8, despite the fact that we think this year we're going to hit 28.2, at least. In our rate summary, I want to mention the average effective retail rate increase is 17.9%. It does include our decision package, which reduces our operating costs by more than the required 5%. We've eliminated 24.5 FTEs and another 14.5 limited-term positions for a total of 39 positions in the Water Bureau. And those weren't extra positions. Those are positions that we're going to do important things in maintaining our system. As Dean Marriott mentioned already, we have changed our low-income discount program. The increase from 40% to 50%, the reduction that which will result in approximately $9.78 a month. Excuse me. Our system development charges increases are less than 2%, and I have a chart at the very back of my materials that shows that we are well under other regional providers in our SDC costs. An important factor is something that Commissioner Leonard has been pushing us for the 4 years that I've been in the Water Bureau, and that is we're establishing fixed prices for services, mains, and other facilities. This is something that developers have been pushing us for as long as Commissioner Leonard's been with the commissioner in charge of BDS. They're looking for predictability, and we have finally put something together that says if you're going to build 600 feet of 8-inch main on an asphalt street, this is what it's going to cost you. This is what we're going to charge you. We're no longer providing them estimates, which at the end of the day, we give them a bill that has a $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 increase. They are going to get one number, and we're going to stick with that number.
Confident that then we're going to be able to recoup our costs? Certainty of our estimate?
We will on an annual basis go through our rate charges, and we will look at all of the projects that we built, and we will revise our projects based on that. We did a very sophisticated look at all of these projects and went down to the gnat's eyelash as much as we could to calculate how much these various jobs cost us. We took the average, and of course there are going to be some below and some above, and we will look at this on an annual basis.
Did you say gnat's eyelashes?
I did.
Is that like sharpening your pencil?
Very much so, except that it's sharper than that. Okay. Our base charge. Our base charge and our volume charge are both increasing the same percentage, the 17.9%. That is correct. That is a judgment call that we made. The base charge is currently below the cost of service. It has been since Commissioner Sten was in charge of the Portland Water Bureau and a policy decision was made, I think it's about a decade ago, to move away from cost of service on the base charge. And the reason I say it's not cost of service is because currently we exclude meter costs, meter testing, meter maintenance, and overhead from that base charge. In my opinion, that's incorrect. We should move in the direction of capturing all that in the base charge. It is part of delivering water, whether you use it or not. It's part of the cost of making sure that water is available at your house. So we have not made a policy decision. That is something that we will be talking with PERB about. We will be working with our subcommittee on the work group that's talking about the base charge. We simply made the decision in this fiscal year that our rate increase should be across the board on both the rate, the volumetric rate, and the base charge. But I will tell you that the proposed increase does not capture the full cost of the basic service of providing water to the meter.
Well, I guess on that point, there is going to be a group
put together to look at the whole issue of the base charge.
And there actually is a group, and they have been meeting. We are due to see a report from them sometime in the next month or so.
Oh, next month.
Yes.
So the report is to be due. Okay, so this testimony from PERB said they didn't know about the proposed increase to the base charge prior to this hearing, it sounded like.
Commissioner, I'm Dave Hassan, Finance Director of the Water Bureau. This base charge committee that you're referring to was put together as a result of a previous year budget note. Mm-hmm. And we have been talking about the base charges since the at least January. Maybe
I know you're talking about base charges and the concept, but they're talking about the proposed increase of 22% to the base charge.
There was a discussion in this base charge committee on at least two occasions where we talked about these items that David just mentioned, meter cost, meter testing, meter maintenance, overhead not being included, but that they could be included. I don't recall that that specific conversation occurred at PERB until the last PERB meeting, but and then only very, very passingly. But this base charge committee work group is proposing to provide information to council in a more complete way so that in future years we can follow the will of the council with regard to how this is structured.
And what would be the impact if we didn't increase the base charge?
Thank you. I was just getting ready to mention that. If we have to increase, if we keep the base charge flat, then we have to increase the volumetric charge. The volumetric charge would have to go up to 23%, not 17.9. So again, what we did was we made a judgment call. We made the rate increase across the board on base and volumetric, and the base charge still does not capture the full cost of service. And that's the cost to provide you with water, whether you use any or not. So if you leave your house and go away for the next 6 months on vacation, there is still a cost to provide service to that meter. And the proposed rate increase will not capture that entire cost. That's one of the things that we think we should be looking at over the next year.
David, just to follow up, if you put the burden on the volume charge as the alternative, that disproportionately impacts who?
Business. And we have been doing that for the last several years. Because businesses, our large customers are the ones that the volumetric charge
hotels, hits. Car washes, retail laundries.
Bakker, Siltronic, all of those big customers, including our biggest customers, Port of Portland, Portland Public Schools, Portland Parks, PDC, HDC. If you turn the page to water bills, I just want to go through the typical monthly bill and make some comparisons. We use CCF, so I'll try and interpret for you. The typical residential monthly bill, which is 6 CCF, that's 4,500 gallons, increases $2.76. Now, for comparison purposes, the BES increase will be just over $3 a month. Basic cable will be $3.59 a month. PGE will be $6.86 a month. Northwest Natural Gas is $10.67 a month. Now, still 17.9%, but it's $2.76 a month.
That's one of the reasons why we've had to cancel most of those other services in my household. No, but let's come back to your comparator for a second on water. What explains why Beaverton, for example, and Gresham in your chart are significantly more expensive than the proposed rate here in Portland? Do you have a sense on that? You do the comparison of typical monthly residential utility
right.
bills, and particularly the Gresham rate is, close to twice.
Commissioner, I don't know, Dave.
It's hard to answer that, Commissioner, with a lot of specificity. But there are a couple of factors. One is we have economies of scale on our system. I mean, we're bigger, so the cost per unit tends to be somewhat less. Another factor is, related to that, I guess, is their administrative costs and overhead are spread over a smaller number of units, so their rate is higher. Then also, their rates are set based in part on what we charge them, and what we charge them is based on a wholesale contract that's very specific in terms of what we charge them and how we charge them, including depreciation, return on investment, and so on. Our retail ratepayers don't pay on that basis. So it's a completely different structure for them as compared to our ratepayers.
And frankly, their system's a little bit more expensive to run, although they get a lot of Bull Run water from us at a very cheap rate. They supplement that Bull Run water with their own groundwater system, and they pump. We don't. Ours is one of the greenest systems around.
Thank you.
As I mentioned, low-income residential, 5 CCF, so just over 3,700 gallons a month, will actually go down 13 cents to 786 a month. The medium commercial 200 CCF monthly bill, that's 150,000 gallons a month. That's a lot of water. Does increase up to 75.61, and I don't remember if Tracy introduced himself as the general manager of the Hilton, but that's I have the Hilton numbers too because we've shared that with Tracy. His annual or his monthly usage is 4,545 units. That's 3.4 million gallons a month. So there's a lot of water going through, and his rate is going up $1,600 a month to $11,153. So we know that there are increases to our very large commercial customers, but we're talking about 3.4 million gallons a month. If you turn the page looking at our basic utility services, I've already mentioned that in the past, water is a very cheap commodity. If you look at the comparison between water, natural gas, electricity, the telephone, sewer, solid waste, and recycling, water is a very good deal. Commissioner Fish, you mentioned something about the utilities in your household. I pay $56 a month for water, sewer, and stormwater. So my combined water, sewer, and stormwater bill is $56 a month. I pay more for my cell phone. You've already looked at the chart on the comparison of monthly residential utility bills. I don't need to touch on that. We are one of the cheapest rates in town. You're going to see Rockwood going up. They're putting in new wells. TVWD is getting ready to start an $800 million expansion of their Hag Lake complex. We are all facing significant rate increases across the board. Looking at the next page, residential SDCs, I've already mentioned we are the lowest in town. I don't need to cover that anymore. I do want to touch on the PERB and Dave Johnson's specific recommendations. Looking at page 11, if we reduced our operating costs by an additional 5%, that would total an 11.2% operating cut. So the 5 plus the 6.2 I've already got. An additional $3.5 million reduction. I would lose $440,000 in wholesale revenue, $500,000 in capitalized overhead revenue. I would have to cut 35 positions. Those would be filled positions. And there'd be a rate benefit of about 2.9%. I don't know where those 35 positions would come from. They'd be mostly operations, and we'd have to make some very hard decisions. Bottom line is I'd have to reduce services. I'd have to stop maintaining decorative fountains. I'd have to stop maintaining grounds. I'd have to cut my customer service staff. I'd have to do thing. I'd have to cut positions that I can't afford to cut. And you would see a reduction in service. You want me to stop talking now?
No. I just need, at some appropriate point, I need to have a quick pause because we have an elected official in the room that we're going to take a quick pause and go through a quick resolution.
Okay.
But finish where you pause where you think it makes sense. We'll bring you back.
I can stop right here.
Good decision.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. All right. Unless there's objections on council, I'd like to suspend the rules to hear the resolution, which is contained in council calendar item 668. Carla, would you please read the title for item 668?
Recognize the work of the Oregon Human Trafficking Task Force and support the Oregonians Against Trafficking Humans campaign.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. The city and the county are both hearing resolutions, us today, the county tomorrow, and to recognize the work of Oregonians Against Human Trafficking Task Force. The resolution in front of us is intended to bring attention to the problem of human trafficking. Unfortunately, the public has a misconception that human trafficking is an international issue that exists in Asia or Eastern Europe. But in reality, it is occurring right here in Multnomah County. People are being bought and sold essentially as slaves, either for prostitution purposes or forced labor, trapped in lives of misery, often beaten, starved, and as I said, forced to work as prostitutes or forced labor. So I wanted to bring up County Commissioner Diane McKeel, who is working with me on this issue. I should say she's leading on this issue, on the joint resolutions, and also to bring up Multnomah County Deputy Sheriff Keith Bickford, who is really doing an outstanding job as the leader of the task force. So, Commissioner McKeel.
Welcome, Commissioner. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. Good morning. Mayor and commissioners, I would first like to thank Commissioner Dan Salzman for his work on this issue and bringing it before you today. Tomorrow, I will be bringing forward a similar resolution before the Board of County Commissioners. I hope you will support Commissioner Salzman in recognizing the work being done by the Oregon Human Trafficking Task Force and supporting the Oregon's Against Human Trafficking campaign. Last year, I had the privilege of completing the Multnomah County Sheriff's Citizens Academy. It was there I met Deputy Keith Bickford. Deputy Bickford opened my eyes to an epidemic that is going on right here in our backyard, human trafficking. Today in the United States, it is estimated that 300,000 minors are being trafficked for sexual exploitation. 90% of the victims are American citizens. In the most recent FBI cross-country sting, Portland was number 2 for trafficked victims found. We cannot sit by idly as our sons and our daughters are being forced into modern-day slavery. I encourage each of you to take the oath to work towards ending human trafficking. I would also like to invite you to attend the Sexually Exploited Youth Conference this Thursday, tomorrow at Reynolds High School in Troutdale, Oregon, to learn more about the issue of human trafficking. If you are able or interested in attending and would like more information on the conference, please feel free to contact Deputy Bickford or myself. Thank you again for having me today. It's been a pleasure to work with Commissioner Salzman and Shannon Callahan on this issue and the resolution before you. I look forward to our ongoing partnership in working together to end human trafficking, and I will turn this over to Deputy Bickford for a few remarks or any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Deputy?
Actually, if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer if anything regarding this, the school thing tomorrow, whatever. Commissioner McKeel pretty much said everything that needs to be said about it. I just been working, trying to find services for these children, trying to make sure that we have everybody recognize the issue of any child that's sexually exploited under the age of 18 is actually a victim of human trafficking. So it hasn't been a common knowledge at all. So that's been a big part of my job, and also to try to find a place to secure these children, these young people, to help them get back a regular life of a 15, 16-year-old. So,
just had one question, if I could. Deputy, when we were, many of us were at a Montevilla public forum, I think in the fall, there were some testimonials about the extent to which recruitment is going on in our public school system. Could you just briefly touch on that?
Yes, sir. That's a very good point, and that's why I wanted to start this off at Reynolds High School, because one of the pimps that I did discuss some issues with that was in prison told me that he referred to a high school as a buffet of kids to recruit. It was very easy to do that type of recruitment in the school. So that kind of kick-started my interest in getting involved with both the junior highs and high schools in the state of Oregon, and to start not only just educating the administration, but the teachers, the counselors, security, custodians, anybody involved with these kids, and start some sort of a war against this.
Other discussion from council? Thank you very much. Really
appreciate
your work.
Thank you for both being here.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks. Thank you.
Does anyone wish to testify on council calendar item 668? If not, we've lost our clerk. Has anyone signed up? Carla, could you please call the roll?
Fish?
Thanks to County Commissioner McKeel for her leadership on this issue, and to my colleague Dan Saltzman, and as the proud father of a high school sophomore, it's very sobering to learn that there are people actually targeting our public schools and using a variety of deceptive techniques to approach kids and target kids who appear to have low self-esteem and other indicators, and then rope them into this. And I'm pleased that I'm disgusted that this is occurring, but pleased that you're shining a light on it and helping to educate our community and protect our children. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank Commissioner McKeel for bringing forward this resolution. I urge all of us to support the Oregonians Against Trafficking Humans campaign, which is designed to promote awareness around this, how serious this issue is and disturbing as it is. The first step in solving a problem is to acknowledge there is a problem, though, and this is a step in that direction. So I also want to thank Deputy Sheriff Bickford for all the great work that he's doing and his task force members. Aye.
Leonard.
So thank you, Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner McKeel and Deputy Pickford. I appreciate you working on this. Aye.
Fritz.
Very good work. Thank you. Aye.
Adams.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Aye. Resolution is approved. We'll now get back to David Schaff and the discussion of Council Calendar Item 629.
I think my presentation is pretty much at an end. I don't need to cover the very last three pages. They are simply examples of how we would achieve an additional cut to get down to that PERB recommended level of 5%.
Okay. Unless there's additional questions from council, we'll go to testimony. How many people have signed up?
We have one person.
Okay.
Kathy Teresi, I believe it is.
Sorry. Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. Just an announcement as well, housekeeping announcement. We'll be taking a half-hour break at noon because we're going all day and all night. So you might need a break as well. So a half-hour break at noon.
Hi. Hello, my name is Kathy Tortorisi, and I'm a board member of the Harrison East Condominiums. We're located at 111 Southwest Harrison, and I just wanted to talk very briefly about the water and sewer increases. I'm hoping it's appropriate to bring up sewer. You'd let those other folks do that as well. So based on my calculation, and I could be wrong, of rate increases that you guys are proposing, it's going to be about $7,000 per year increase based on water and sewer for the percentages that you all are proposing, and that's quite a bit. Our building it's not a high-end condo. We have homeowner association fees that are probably higher than average for the average condo in Portland because it's an older building that was built in the mid to late 60s, and so this is a lot. In addition, the Business Improvement District is proposing a change to the city code that you guys will be soon seeing, is my understanding, to bring condominiums in to help pay for the Business Improvement District. And we were told by that organization that they were going to start charging us $15,000 a year for inclusion in the Business Improvement District. So between these two items, that's about $22,000 in one fell swoop increase for us. Now, I'm not here to say that the increase that you're proposing for water and sewer isn't appropriate. I mean, the fellow that just spoke from the Water Bureau, and I know Dean Marriott personally, you know, there are issues at hand that need to be dealt with. I'm just asking you all to be thoughtful about not only the immediacy of the increases that you're talking about now for water and sewer, but the other incremental increases that could be imposed upon our condominium all at once. We are taking steps to reduce our water usage through xeriscaping, drip irrigation systems that we were trying to put in for landscaping, changing out our washers for energy-efficient washers that use half the water that they have now. So it's not like we're not aware and not trying to build on the sustainability that the city is known for. It's just that this is an expense. It's a high expense for us, and I'm just really asking you all to be thoughtful in your final decision on what you end up in terms of these rate increases. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Unless anyone else wishes to testify, Mr. Schaff, Commissioner Fritz has a question, follow-up question.
Thank you very much for working with our office and giving me more information. There's a rate increase summary table that we were provided with, and it talks about it breaks out the 17.9% increase, and one of the factors is inflation at 4%. I'm not sure if inflation is still 4%, but I think you mentioned in your comments that if it comes in lower, that there would be a summer youth jobs program.
It's a blended inflation rate. Okay. That we've worked with OMF, and OMF is comfortable with our usage of that rate. The difference was that we were predicting a larger COLA for employees, and it came in at a slightly smaller number, and that would give us a rate benefit, a very small, less than half of a percent rate benefit. And what I've done is looked at whether or not I can take some of the money that I cut from my budget. I cut a little over $400,000 from my part-time budget to see if I can bring some of that back in and do some summer youth employment. One of the things that we do on an annual basis is paint and maintain and test all of our hydrants. We cut that out this year.
Is that what the employment is?
Yes, and we're going to use them at grounds. One of the things we're way behind on is meter box maintenance, where the meter reader comes by and sees that it's full of dirt from the molds, et cetera. That's fairly easy stuff for a young group to be able to work on. So we're going to try and catch up on some of our deferred maintenance that we're simply not going to get to.
Other questions?
My other question is on deferred maintenance and setting a schedule for catching up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a schedule, and do you have a plan for when will we caught up?
We have, through our asset management group, plans for out years. I think what we're going to be doing for the next several years, for the next 5 or 6 years, is primarily just trying to tread the water that we're currently treading while we get through our LT2 capital expenditures. Once we've done that, we will have what I would call rate capacity to turn our attention to other things. So we will maintain, but we're probably not going to catch up, not for the next several years.
And the LT2 is about, and the other capital improvements is about 4.1%.
That's correct.
And is that counting on the $380 million treatment or the $180 million
treatment? The $385.
So isn't part, when I raised this under the budget discussion, I was told that mm-hmm. decision is going to be made as part of the rate discussion. Mm-hmm. So should we at some point, Council, have a discussion on whether we want a $380 million solution or a $180 million solution? Because that would make a difference on the rates, right?
No, it won't make a difference on this year's rate, Commissioner. What I have in this year's upcoming budget is it's just under $10 million for designing a treatment plant. And whether I design a UV plant or a direct filtration plant, it's going to cost approximately that. So it will not have an effect on this year's rate. It will have an effect on out years.
So I've asked the Water Bureau on that point to develop an analysis, and they've given me a preview of that that compares each of the options, the costs, the benefits, the detractions of each of the various kinds of treatment options that we're allowed to do. So we will all be getting that very soon.
So it doesn't affect this year's rates?
It will not affect this year's rates.
Could we have a public hearing on that? Or?
Absolutely. That was our intention, was to have a work session on that where the
Great.
Public would testify. But it is a decision we need to make fairly soon, because they do need to start engineering something this next year.
Right.
Thank you.
Our chief engineer would like us to make a final decision by July so that we can get moving.
Thank you. That's the end of my questions.
Any other discussion with Mr.
I think I was confused during the work session. So your inflation factor is
4%? Is that right?
4%.
Something like, okay. But the COLA for employees is the same as COLA for all citywide employees.
Yes, I think 2.8.
About 2.8?
Yeah.
I think I was confused about that previously. Just wanted to make sure.
It's the same across the board. We're simply using a blended 4%.
And keep in mind that the 4% also includes materials and services. Our chemical costs are going up at 28%. Power at